break out my notes. I need something to keep me on track because I'm all over the place.
You're in the right place.
Yes, I think so. My name's Tom, an alcoholic.
Hi, Tom.
My sobriety date's January 29th, 1989. And my home group is the Friends of Bill group in Suffolk. And that's my introduction. First of all, I'll start at the very beginning. I was born in Japan. I'm an Army brat. I like to say I moved around the world twice before I was 15. And that's just my life. And as I've moved a lot, different schools, different countries, been to Germany, been to Korea. First started getting in trouble like fourth grade. And it just started snowballing from there. I mean, how about the, I wasn't drinking, but I was kind of had the addicted personality. And kind of like me and some buddies would break into the Army base and steal the C rations and steal the cigarettes out of them and go to our little hangout in the plum orchard and smoke cigarettes and bullshit, you know, in the fourth grade. And that's kind of like what I did. Sixth grade, we moved. And we relocated to, what do you think? San Antonio, Texas. And I went through the seventh grade there. I don't know. I moved a lot. I know we were landing in San Antonio for a little bit. And then we moved to D.C. And when I was in San Antonio, though, it was the first time I started drinking. I was about 13. And that's, I don't know, it just kind of like opened doors for me. As I moved around, it just seemed like it was always fresh starts wherever I went. You know what I mean? And every time I went there, it was kind of like, okay, let's see what else I can do different. And it's still the same thing, you know? It's just, I'm still me. And I still had that personality, addictive personality. And I think I started drinking early, but I don't know. But I remember my first blackout, kinda. I remember the night it happened. You know what I mean? But I don't remember what happened. But, you know, that was kind of like something that I was still young, you know, and barely 14. And that was something new for me. I never had that happen. So I said, oh, no, I'm not going to do that again. And generally, the way I stopped that was just building up tolerance, I guess, you know. Didn't get in trouble that night, but that's fine. I got dropped off on my front porch of my dad's house, of the house that I lived at, on post. And they drove off and left me a stinking drunken mess on the front porch. And I remember that. And the disappointment in my dad's eyes, things along those lines. And continued to do that while I was in Texas and went up to D.C. Dad got transferred there. I was in Alexandria, and then it kind of like things started going further and further, got messed around with other things and drinking. I got a fake ID, and I'd be able to go to 7-Eleven. I was kind of a tall fella for a young guy, and I used to say, yep, I'm 18. And they would give me my quarts of Schlitz malt liquor, and I was ready to go, you know what I mean? And that's what I did while I was in Texas. I used to play a lot of football back then. I played football all my high school career, all the time in high school except for my senior year. But I won't get into that. But it was, you know, a fun time. You know, I used to go out and I was a guard and, you know, defensive end and stuff like that and linebacker. And that was pretty cool because I get to levy pain. That's the way I looked at it. I didn't get hurt. And I don't know, I'm not a violent person, but it seems like I was pretty quick to be able to defend myself. Moved from D.C. Mom and Dad got divorced, and we moved to Texas again, Austin. My aunt lived there, and she put us up till we moved into a house. It was my senior year in high school, and I just said, I'm done. I ended up saying, I'm not gonna participate. I'm not gonna go to school. And I would just skip a class every day. It was a different class. It was five periods, so I would skip the first period Monday, second period Tuesday, and I'd be out doing other things, you know what I mean? And that's when I could go to the store for lunch and buy the pony 8-packs. I don't know if y'all remember the pony beers. You know, that was my lunch. And I would do that through my senior year. And that was my drinking. It just seemed like when Dad left, I felt that Mom's not going to control me. I want to do what I want. We used to do a lot of crazy crap back then. And this is back in the early 70s, you know, in class of 76. And it was just what I did. Against, I keep saying that, I'm sorry. But I did get in trouble quite a few times. I know I've been to jail a few times in Austin. Generally, I call it nonconformity, but usually I was drunk when I went there. You know what I mean? And that was just, you know, I was kind of like not listening. How about this? They couldn't tell me what to do. And it ended up landing me in the back of squad cars. And I just accepted it. That's the way it is, you know? You know, I developed a saying on that because I always seemed to get out of it. And it was, I said, I might be able to beat the rap, but I'm not going to beat the ride, you know what I mean? Because I'd get down there and then next thing, drop the charges. The other guy wouldn't press charges. You know, the charges, you know, just would go away. And, you know, I was a smart ass sometimes. Like, whenever they asked me if I understood my rights, I learned to say, no, I don't understand them. I just don't understand my rights. And the cops used to get pissed off about that, but it was just because I was drunk and I was being, you know, kind of lippy, you know? As you can tell, I was drinking a lot through growing up, and when I graduated high school, you gotta understand this is class 76. The thing back then was everybody drops out and gets their GED and goes to work in oil fields. You know, that's what they do in Texas. And my brother dropped out, and I didn't. I graduated, which is fine, and I'm glad I did nowadays, but back then I just, God. I just skated through school. By the time I got there from Virginia, all my prerequisites were met. So all I had to take was like two classes required during the whole semester. And I just skated through. So I started working. My job was, I used to drive trucks. I used to drive one-ton dualies, delivering oxyacetylene out in the oil fields. And that's kind of heavy work. And, you know, that was something that I liked doing it. I got away from the shop. I was my own boss in the truck. And I was out driving around delivering oxyacetylene out in the hill country. And what was really weird is nobody really stopped me when I went to 7-Eleven, grabbed a beer, and jumped that truck and drove off, you know. And I'd drive in the back of my truck, be a bunch of empties and stuff, and ended up, they had a bad policy of paying me on Thursday. Yeah. And I would go out, and everybody was usually late for work on Fridays. Mondays, all my money was spent up, and I had to work for 3 days, you know, like on PB&J and stuff. And that was my cycle. I did that for a long time. Finally, they got tired of me being there, I guess. I graduated from a one-ton dually to a 10-ton truck with a split rear end and stuff like that. I love driving that thing. And, you know, I did never wreck that thing, but some people ran into me. You know what I mean? But stuff like that. And I wasn't drunk at the time, but that's just me being careless, I guess. And that's kind of my devil be damned attitude, you know what I mean? And came to be a time when they let me go. Let me go for consistent tardiness. I've been there 6 years. And I was working odd jobs. I picked up a job driving a box truck delivering vegetables. Blew a couple of those trucks up, but they were just machined wrong, man. You know what I mean? I mean, when you're carrying like 2 tons of taters in a like a box truck that is only rated for 1 ton up a hill in Texas, it kind of strains an engine out. But nevertheless, I couldn't hold on to a job. I'd always end up being late, and they wouldn't put up with it. And the only reason I was late is because I just tied one on when I shouldn't have. There were times when that I did that at the minute. I'd like to say, what I like to call it, I got drunk at the most inopportune times. I remember one of my ex-fiancées, and she had a retirement for her father. And we were going there, and I said, we got to stop by a liquor store. And I bought a pint of Yukon Jack, which is like, not Everclear, but Southern Comfort with 100 proof in it. And that's primed me up to go. And that's kind of like a cycle that I've always done, is like, go ahead and start that, get drunk, and then make an ass of myself. And she was pissed. And eventually we didn't get married. And that's kind of, I associate that to my drinking too, you know? But it's fine, everything happens to me for a reason, the way I look at it. As I did that, with my list, I joined the military in 86. Delayed entry program. I thought I'd join the Navy. They'd take me around the world drinking. I thought, woohoo! You know what I mean? And they took me. Because, like I said, all my past history, charges got dropped, stuff like that. They did find something way back when I got arrested for distribution in high school, but the charges were dropped there too, but that's a different story and a different type of mindset. And they didn't really do anything about it because, like, again, it was the mid-80s. So I went to a ship, went to boot camp, and as soon as they let us loose out of boot camp, it was craziness. I mean, I was a quartermaster, which is, if those that don't know, it's a ship's navigation team. And that's what I did on the ship. And I just ended up out of boot camp. Oh my God, the A school was in Pensacola. Not Pensacola, it was in Florida at Orlando. And me and some buddies, one guy was older, had some sort of means. We rented a car and went to Fort Lauderdale. I got snot driven drunk and got a tattoo. And, you know, and then we checked in the hotel. I got one of the shorter guys over my shoulder, and we're checking in our whites. We'd already gone to Kmart and bought clothes because we weren't allowed to have civilian clothes when you got out of boot camp. And took them up to the room, and we rented a suite. But it was a party. And that's, nothing really happened, you know? But that's kind of like some of the insanity I did. Got assigned to the ship after graduating second in the class of the QMA school. And what ended up happening was I got assigned to a destroyer in Long Beach, in San Diego, down 32nd Street. And why did they put me there? You know, I mean, there's a trolley that runs down the TJ right there, you know, right offside the base. And I used to go down there. But it's about a year or so being stationed there. I was going, man, there's got to be something more to life than what I'm doing. And I was looking, I was thinking, you know, maybe I'll go volunteer to the church, start doing something. But kind of like my nightlife wouldn't let me do that. It just wouldn't happen. I got in trouble there. It's just generally bullshit trouble, like, oh, you can't park there, so we're going to kick you off the base. So I was parking out on the railroad tracks and stuff. And car gets broken into, things like that. And that's only because I was getting drunk all the time, getting in trouble. Never with the mask, but, you know, it's easy to go to work when you got somebody kicking your rack going, get up, it's time for muster. You know what I mean? And I ended up going to the yards in Long Beach, and I got a speeding ticket for doing 90 and a 55. And I was going, and I was carrying on my normal drinking, getting primed and going to bars and coming home. And he said, listen, he gave me the field sobriety test, and I'm like 87 or 88, somewhere around there. And I've always, I practiced the field sobriety test because I knew what it was anyway. So I was able to pass it pretty easily. Heel the toe, no problem. Touch my nose, no problem. And do it in the dark, whatever. And it ended up, he told me, I should lock you up right now. I know you're drunk, but I'll let you go. So you're right outside the gate. So he let me go park the car. I parked the car, we jumped in another car, and we went to go to the airport, pick somebody else up. But, you know, on the way up to go get that other car, I said, God help me, why do I keep doing this to myself? A thought came into my mind that I should see the DAPA on the boat and say, look, I think I got a problem drinking. And he looked at me and he says, okay, we'll set you up for an appointment. And then I look back on that and I says, well, hell yeah, you did. I'm 29-year-old E2. You know what I mean? I didn't join the military when I was just out of high school. I was old. I consider myself old back then. Considering the guy I worked for was 24. You know what I mean? And so I went to rehab, the intake, not the intake, the first eval for that. And I told her the truth. So, well, how much do you drink? I said, before or after I get to the bar? You know? And I told them the truth. And they said, okay, we're gonna set you up. So I went to rehab at, the name of the hospital, but it was in Orange County. It was a Navy hospital there, and it was weird walking into that room where everybody's sitting there, complete strangers, and all the new guys had to go on the stage and say why they're there. And it was like we had the drug people, had the alcoholics, and we had the overeaters all in there. And I said, my name's Tom, I'm an alcoholic. The first time I ever said it, and it was kind of like, whoa, it felt kind of good, you know? Kind of good admitting it to myself that I was actually an alcoholic. I didn't realize what the hell I had to do afterwards, but, you know, that was good for me, you know? They put us on a van on Monday and took us out to a meeting. And it was weird walking in the first meeting. Everybody knew each other. Everybody saying hello. I like to say it's kind of like Cheers, where everybody knew your name. You know what I mean? I never got that reception in any bar I went to, because usually I'd had to go to different bars until they forgot where I was, you know, the last time I came in. But it was something that I thought, this is pretty cool, you know, because I remember the way it was. So I went through rehab, and rehab is kind of, back then when I went through it, they made you write a lot of stuff down, and a lot of analyzing things and stuff like that. And it's kind of like, they don't tell you it, but it's not a four-step, but it is where you write the wreckage of your past. And I wrote that down there. And I was honest about everything. My dad left when I was 15. I pretty much, you know, threw everything out the window then and just did what I wanted. And, you know, that was the life I lived. Got out of rehab, and every night I didn't have duty, I was going to meetings. I did that for the whole time I was there, and I did that, till pretty much till we had a kid. But anyway, that's another story. While I was there getting sober, before I left LA, I met a young lady in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we kind of never wanted to be boyfriend and girlfriend. We just wanted to be friends, and we got along really well, and things have gone fabulously well since then. But you know, there's always potholes and everything. But you know, we ended up. I'll continue on. So I was in LA, and I ended up getting out of the Navy. I said the seashore rotation sucks. So we had a Navy exchange officer on board, Coast Guard exchange officer on board. He told me about the life in the Coast Guard and patrol boats, and I jumped right out. I was a TAR, so I only did 3 years active duty, and I was supposed to do like 4 years reserve duty. And I really didn't like the reserve work because you work 5 days a week for manpower, and then you work a weekend, and you work 5 days a week again. That's 2 weeks straight of work, you know? And I said, no, I don't know. But as soon as I got out of the Navy, I put in my paperwork for the Coast Guard. It took them 3 months to approve me because of all my past. You know what I mean? That usually gets a red flag sitting on somebody's desk, it seemed like. And I was joined the Coast Guard, left my wonderful girlfriend behind, and offered to take her with me, but she said no. So I moved to Virginia. Came to Virginia in 90 and started going to meetings here. I didn't have a car. That's another story. I had a car, right, in L.A. I got rear-ended by a drunk dude on heroin and ended up totaling the car out. Here I am, a newly sober guy. I didn't have any insurance on that car. I didn't take any responsibility for anything. I didn't have any insurance. So I didn't want anything on my credit history, so I paid off that car anyway. I had to pay off on it for like 18 months after I got into the Coast Guard. And that's okay. You know, even though the car is sitting in the junkyard, I took my radio out and said, I'm never going to see that car again. And it was gone. And I came here and people started coming out to the base and picking me up. That's amazing. You know, Doug Mayo used to come pick me up almost every other night. And then we'd go out to eat with Red and Cindy and a bunch of other people down in Craddock and stuff like that. And that was a wonderful thing for me. It got me out of off the boat, because back then you didn't live on the economy. You lived on the boat unless you were married. And I wasn't going to do that just willy-nilly. So I ended up getting rides from Doug. Doug was a great guy. He used to come pick me up, hit Doug and another guy named Doug. I called the other brother Doug. But, you know, he used to come get me also. And that was great for me because, like, once again, didn't have duty. Sitting on a ship, man, at night in Portsmouth at the Coast Guard base, there's no buses. The closest bus is like about a mile and a half or so down the road. And then I don't even know where the bus stop was. But it's kind of like removed from everything. Let's put it that way. So, while I'm doing that, I was working the steps. Yep, didn't do them worth a damn. I did 1 through 3. I was a 3-stepper for years. I didn't really do a 4-step till later on, and we'll get to that. But I don't recommend that for anybody. I moved from there to... Oh, wait, there's more. While I was on that boat, I was corresponding with my girlfriend from LA, and we decided to get married. So we got married, and we drove from LA to Virginia, a 1984 Courier pickup truck with everything in the back in plastic bags. And because it rained, you know, that's a long trip. And and if you ever, with no AC in August, and if you ever want to get to know your significant other, that's a honeymoon to take. You know what I mean? Because you're sweating your ass off. Anyway, it taught us how to get along and work the program and other things. But it just seemed like, for me, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was tired of being drunk all the time. You know, and I don't ever want to go back. I just remember looking back and saying, damn. You know, I remember when I first came in, all my buddies, married, children, all these other things, houses, they bought her car, new car. Here I am still being me, you know. So Lisa and I got married. And she came out here, and I gave her a map, because 2 weeks later, I was underway for 2 months to go down and to do the Haitian vacation. And if anybody knows what that was, back in the early 90s, the Haitians were just fleeing like the devil out of there. I was going to go derogatory. That's not what I should do. And it ended up... she hooked up with some people like Cindy. I call it, there's her sponsor. I used to call her the witch because she'd fly in her broom and take Lisa off, which is fine, you know what I mean? But we started going to different meetings, things like that. We rarely went to meetings together. And that's fine. That's what we needed to do for ourselves to maintain our own separation, I guess. I don't know. But I got transferred out of there to Morgan City, Louisiana. And if anybody knows where Morgan City is, it's right in the armpit of the boot. And it just seems like I was working vessel traffic then for the Coast Guard. And it was a shore duty tour, which is cool. Stand and watch, do a 12-hour watch a couple times, then get like 48 off or something like that. And went to Morgan City AA, and it was pretty small groups there, and it was cool, kind of. I mean, everybody knew everybody's name again, you know, because, and the people there are so hospitable in Morgan City, crawfish boils all the time, things like that, and it just ended up being good for us. While we were there, we had a baby. We had a 8-pound, 21-inch baby girl. And we're taking her home from the hospital. I'm going, oh my God, what have we got? You know what I mean? I mean, I'm 33 years old and I have a child and I'm just freaking out because what do I do with this child? And, well, it's pretty easy when they're young because they pretty much let you know what they need, you know, pretty quickly. And it was an experience. I was still only working the first three steps through that whole time, you know. And I ended up moving to Texas after that, got a patrol boat. And I was on a patrol boat, and it was a 10-man crew, 110-foot boat. And it was absolutely hell-binding. I mean, I was gone doing border patrol. Then they said, got this big idea. Let's take this boat from just off the coast of Galveston and send it over to Puerto Rico and do the Mona Pass. Stop the, it's got Haiti, the other side. I don't know, people trying to get over to Puerto Rico from Hispaniola. And we did that, and it was, there were 6 week patrols. And I vowed to myself on that boat that if I ever go back to another boat, it's going to be a big white one, because they're just doing 6 week patrols and they got laundry. And on a patrol boat, you don't have laundry. And it was like funky. And we did good there. We got as many migrants as the big boats did. But I was home ported in Freeport, Texas. And the median income was like 90K because they're all engineers. And this is in 95. And I started working steps more. I got a sponsor. I went through my four step there. And we sat in a park. And I didn't hold nothing back. Went through it all. And that was pretty cool, you know. He was telling me about people hiding out in AA and not branching out and living life, things like that. I learned that there, and I know that I have branched out in my sobriety, and kind of like I don't hide out in AA at all. I'm all over the map. I'm not afraid to go anywhere. But it was pretty cool because I started working the rest of the steps then. Not right away, of course. You know, it just got to be a point where you start hurting enough, you start working the rest of the steps, you know. So that was a 2-year tour, and I moved to Charleston, South Carolina. I was a SAR controller for Group Charleston. Lived on the Navy base out there. And they always had great housing. Anyway, and that's where I worked some more steps with another sponsor from Boston. And I finished them there. I ended up being involved in a lot of other things with work. And got transferred up to, from Charleston, moved up here. I moved here in 02, moved to Hampton. I lived in Hampton because it was close to everything. It was equidistant to all the Coast Guard bases here. And so if I got, I knew I was going to homestead here because it was like getting towards the end of my career. And we did that. And our child kept growing during this whole time. And it's kind of like, sobriety and teenagers and kids is kind of something I didn't want to do. Well, my dad did. He'd always just say, "Oh, don't you start whining with me. I'll give you something to cry about and stuff like that." And I'm like, living in fear, things along those lines. Never did that. That's something, you know, you just don't ever want to do that. What happened to you that you remember, you know? And that's something that I think that I believe the program Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me is not to do what was done to me. We ended up, while I was in Hampton, got really involved with AA, was home group member, was literature chair for 4 years, had big books in the trunk of my car, driving around, delivering. It's kind of weird. Brought me back to the old days of other things. Or show up in a 7-Eleven parking lot and open the trunk up. You know, things along those lines. Giving big books, Alcoholics Anonymous. What do you need? I got pamphlets too. You know, and, you know, was doing that. I was a GSR. Generally, at our home group, there's a home group of three, and we did 2 years opening up, 2 years of GSR, 2 years of this, treasurer, you know, and we just rotate around the three of us. And opening up for 2 years at a time, making coffee, kind of got old. And this is where I've shared before in meetings where I get kind of burned out on doing service work, you know, because it seems like I don't mind doing service work, but I don't like being the only one doing service work, you know. And it's kind of hard to say the other guys aren't, because we're doing 2-year stints between the three of us. But, you know, we just kept the meeting open, kept having meetings, and it just seemed like the home group wasn't growing. So I decided to leave the home group. I said, look, I'm done, you know. So I left the home group and didn't join another home group for some time. And that's what I had to do. While I was at that home group, I was also part of jails and institutions. I've done jails in Hampton for 3 years. I've been all over the map, you know. And it's just, it's time for other people to step up, the way I look at it. Some people that haven't done anything. Some people that have, how should I put it, just got newly sober. That's my opinion, you know. And so we lived there in Hampton forever, it seems like. One of the longest places I lived anywhere. I've been living in Virginia longer than I lived in Texas. And I got into Texas in 75. I left in 87. So that's something new for me. We moved from Hampton out here to Suffolk. And it just seems like Suffolk is a lot. How should I put this? The reason we moved out here is because we were hearing gunshots a lot at night. Mm-hmm. And where I live in Hampton, I knew it wasn't because people were sighting in their rifles. Out where I live now, I hear gunshots. They're usually not at night, they're during the day. And I know people are sighting in their rifles. You know, I live out kind of in the sticks. Not really, but kind of. And it's real nice. And daughter's still growing. She's gone to school now. She's graduated college. She got her degree in, software engineering. She's living a life I'd never dreamed of. At 23, she's going to Europe next Sunday because she's getting between two jobs. And that's pretty wild. I would never, Lisa and I were talking about this today on the porch. And we feel, she heard from somebody, and I'm going to steal this from you, Lisa, that we think that our daughter turned out the way she did because she was brought up in a sober household. Because we weren't drinking and we were being responsible individuals in society. I think that that is something that really is like, I don't know. I didn't have it when I was growing up. I know that my dad went to NOM. He was off and running, doing other things, you know, for the Army. And, you know, it's like, I feel that the program Alcoholics Anonymous has given me the life that I could ever dream of. I look back on the extracurricular activities I do now, and I'm just absolutely amazed that I'm allowed to do it, you know. I got a job I can't dream of, and it's kind of like, when you're at work and you got like this, you know, you really should have restraint of tongue and pen. You know, I never heard of that crap before until I got here. You know what I mean? But it definitely works. You know, it helps me not react to other people's actions. And that is something that I learned here. I didn't know that out in the world because I was always reacting. And that sometimes is a problem. So, let's see. Right now, I feel that Alcoholics Anonymous is the best thing for anybody that thinks they have a problem with drinking. I know that as time goes on, I think that I'll just continue to do the best I can in the program, you know, try to answer the call. help out in the kitchen, because when I first got sober in LA, that's what I did. I helped clean coffee pots, big 20-gallon ones, or I don't know how big they are, 5-gallon coffee pots. I had two of them in a meeting and cleaned ashtrays, and I was the cake guy. I had to remember who picked up birthdays on Friday nights, huge meeting, 100 people. And I had to remember who picked up birthday chips, and I had to go run out their piece of cake to them, you know? And that's where I first got started doing, getting involved. In the kitchens, I'm kind of like a reclusive guy. I kind of keep my mouth shut a lot. And it kind of helped me get, hey, I'm tall. You know what I mean? And that's something that I wasn't really up to doing. So anyway, I got one more thing to say is like, if you don't think you have a problem with drinking, just look at the, what drinking's done to you and what it hasn't done for you, you know? And think about it. So with that, I'll shut up. So thanks for listening to me.
Well, I think you picked the right home group, because I'm part of the same home group, and I know that the only way you're going to get a service commitment is to become the alternate and wait in line to become the primary. And I think we have a waiting list to be an alternate, so I think you'll be sticking around for a little while if we don't chase you off. All righty. Well, this time we'll go ahead and pass our subdivision basket. Subdivision says that we're self-supporting through our own wings. We pay our expenses here, give a little bit of the church for letting us meet here. Anything we have left over, after that goes to the Tidewater Intergroup. I have a couple of announcements up here. The Craddock Study Group have their 45th anniversary this Saturday night. Dinner, potluck dinner begins at 6:30 with a speaker following. And the speaker is going to be Buster H. from Suffolk. This is the Craddock Baptist Church. If you want any more information on the flyer. And this meeting, it's not a group, but it is a meeting. It's going to be celebrating their one-year anniversary next month on Wednesday, April 26th. This meeting normally starts at 7. We're going to start at 6:30 with some food and fellowship, and we'll have a speaker to follow. We've asked Alicia M. from Virginia Beach to speak at that meeting. Are there any other AA-related announcements? Steve?
I'm Steve Alcoholic.
Hi, Steve.
The speaker next week is K.H. from Ocean View Meeting in Norfolk.
Thanks, Steve. Larry?
As usual, I meet great boss.
Start a collection?
No, they're for corrections and treatment.
Thank you, Larry. Brenda?
I'm Brenda Alcoholic.
Hi, Brenda.
Our home group, Friends of Bill W., on Thursday, March the 23rd, which is a week from tomorrow night, is having a workshop, Came to Believe. We have three panelists, Bob E. from Gloucester, Linda T. from Hampton, and Stacy F. from Portsmouth. It's an eating meeting. We'll start eating at 6:30, and the workshop will follow. And we'd love to see everybody come out. That's Thursday, March the 23rd, 6:30, Friends of Bill W. The end. Thanks.
Thanks, Brenda. If you're looking for a home group, that is one I would suggest you check out. We have our business meeting tomorrow night. Start at 6:30, last for an hour, and to take a little break before we start the 8 o'clock book study. So come on out and join us if you're interested. All right, at this time, we've asked our brother Larry to come up and get some chips.
No.
Other brother Larry.
The other brother.
Otherwise known as John.
Okay.